Please come to order. The time is 1:40 on March 24th, Thursday, in Juneau in the Belch Room. And the first bill we'll hear is Senate Bill 344, introduced by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the establishment, collection, enforcement of an employment tax providing for an effective date. Is anybody here from the administration?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jack Kreinheder with the Office of Management and Budget. And the Office of Management and Budget has coordinated the preparation of this bill. I'll keep my remarks brief and we'll be glad to answer any questions you have on the bill. By way of introduction, this bill is intended to be a modest step towards helping to solve our budget shortfalls both this year and in the years to come. The governor is certainly open to looking at spending reductions, use of reserves, and other measures to help balance the budget. But given the size of the shortfalls we're facing both this year and in coming years, the governor feels that it would be fiscally irresponsible to not look at some, at least modest, measures to raise revenues. And this bill is one of four that have been introduced to do that. The employment tax itself would raise about $31 million. It's less in the initial year because it would be in effect only part of the year, but over the long run would raise about $31 million a year. That's certainly not gonna solve our fiscal problems on its own, but as I said, is a part of the puzzle that can help us balance the budget. I'll briefly run through the provisions of the bill. The tax would be levied only on persons age 19 and older. That was an issue of some concern, whether teenagers would be discouraged from even working by a tax of this nature. So it would be only on persons 19 or over. There's a provision in the bill that would reduce the burden on people making less than $1,000 a year. It would be only 10% of their earnings up to $1,000. In addition, it could be collected over a series of paychecks, so we should not be in a situation where somebody has to pay half or more of their paycheck towards this tax. It would be a maximum of 10% of any one paycheck. So I think it's clear that the burden would be fairly modest. People have said, well, an income tax would be more fair because this tax takes the same amount from somebody making just a couple thousand a year as somebody making over $100,000 a year. That's true. And if the legislature wants to pass an income tax, the governor would probably consider signing it. I don't know. But in any case, I think we felt that the climate was not ripe for an income tax and that this was a more modest first step towards help. Two things. One, helping to fill the fiscal gap, and second, to collect something from out-of-state workers who now pay very little towards the services that they get from the state while they are working here, primarily during the summer months. Collection of the tax would be as streamlined as possible. Our intention is to piggyback the collection of the employment tax on collection of other payroll taxes for persons who are employed in a working for others. For self-employed persons, they would be responsible for paying the tax themselves. But while there would be some cost for administration, I don't think the burden for employers would really be very sizable. The tax, the lead agency as far as actual collection of the tax would be the Department of Revenue. They would work with the Department of Labor, as I said, in piggybacking the taxes on the other payroll taxes. Departments of Commerce and Fish and Game would also be involved for self-employed individuals under business license provisions, and for fishermen and so on who get permits to make sure that the tax is collected from all the workers who are responsible for paying it.
Is this model on the old school tax that we used to have here in Alaska?
Mr. Chairman, it is similar to the school tax. I've got that statute in my file. If you'd like to have it in your committee record, there are some differences. The old school tax had some other exemptions. For example, persons in the military, paupers, insane persons, persons injured, infirm, maimed, or crippled. There were a whole slew of exemptions. We're
not allowed to use those terms anymore, are we?
I'm not a lawyer, Mr. Chairman, but certainly in a modern piece of legislation, I don't think we would. I think in our provision to only collect 10% of a person's earnings up to $1,000, I think we've taken care of what used to be called a pauper in the old school tax. We haven't called this revenue measure a school tax because we feel it's the old school tax was not dedicated to schools either. It was intended to make some, I guess, to make sure everybody paid something towards education. In this case, since we're not proposing to dedicate the tax to education, we're not calling it a school tax as the old one was.
Thank you. Question?
Just a question on, does the bill provide a power for DOR to refund overpayments?
Yes, it does. Let me just take a second, see if I can find the section. If not, I'll locate it for you later, Senator. Larry, do you know which section that is offhand? I'm not positive, Senator Rieger, that it's in the bill. It's possible that we intended to provide for that through regulation, but I'll check for you.
Okay. Further questions?
Yes.
Lisa?
I see. Just one last one. The criminal penalties in 4305-290, what kind of criminal penalty can you have for failure to pay a $100 unemployment tax?
What page are you referring to, Senator?
Page 4, line 20.
I'm not familiar with 4305-290. If you'd like, I could ask Larry Meyer from the Department of Revenue.
I'll look it up.
Okay.
I presume it's a misdemeanor.
Yeah, I think it's something like a $1,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail.
Thanks.
I'm sorry, I came in late after that started here. What is the total amount of revenue raised by this?
Over the long run would be about $31 million per year. It's less in the initial year because the tax wouldn't be in effect for the full year.
And I went through part of the fiscal notes there, but basically what are we, what would we pay to collect it?
The total cost of administration, I'd have to add up the fiscal notes myself. Revenue is the major one. It looks like revenue's total cost of administration is about $213,000 a year. Department of Labor is the other agency that has significant collection costs. Theirs total, it varies from year to year. In FY95 would be about $671,000. I think a couple of other departments may have minor amounts, but if you total those two, we're looking at in the neighborhood of $900,000 per year in administrative costs.
So, Mr. Chairman, my follow-up is, on the estimate of revenue raised of $31 million, have those costs been backed out of there?
I was going to say no, but let me double check. The answer is no. 31 million would be, it's the actual figure is about 31.3 million. So if you deduct the roughly 900,000 in administrative costs, you'd be down at what, about 30.2 million.
Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, Risa. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Risa Gerald, and I'm State Director of National Federation of Independent Businesses. On behalf of our 4,400 members, I am here today in opposition to this legislation. On our 1993 ballot, I asked our members, should state government be reduced prior to imposing new taxes or increasing taxes? And 92% of my members responded yes. For my membership to come back with such a strong number is a little on the amazing side, because I feel lucky if I can get like about 75% of them to agree. We have guide outfitters and kayak tour operators, retailers, banks, savings and loans, all sorts of people. And so for them to agree so strongly is a very strong vote for them. We believe that there are ways for the state to save money without disrupting services. I have provided a list of items that the government does that the private sector can very easily do. People passed out of here a bill on publications, getting the state out of the printing business. That's one that can be knocked off this year, hopefully, and it's moving in the other body. And there's other things that you can do to save money without hurting the people and disrupting services. And I thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Risa, where does the state provide daycare centers to compete with private
employers? That was from a lady here in Juneau that she said that there are state funds. She told me that there were state-funded daycare centers that are also exempt from all of the regulations that she's involved with. I can call her and ask her specific location.
Because that's been one of my concerns. You know, I do support daycare centers, but I don't support them in state buildings where state employees have access to them to the exclusion of the general public. And I was just wondering if that is happening. I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I'll give her a call this afternoon.
Further questions? Okay. What does the committee think? I, frankly, am a little concerned with the with the name. And I think we all understand what the old school tax was, and I think this essentially was based on the old school tax. It's more money than the old school tax, but and I think one of the things we're going to have to do this year is try to find additional funds for education. You know, there's a shortfall in what the governor's asked for and what full funding would be, and I think I'd like to see this bill move forward. It's got a long way to go. I'm not certain that I'm going to support it, but I think that in any case, I think the name should be changed to a school employment tax as opposed to just an employment tax. That's why I would support the bill. Senator Sharp.
Also, Mr. Chairman, I would expect the judiciary, or would maybe we could request the judiciary add a mandate for refunds of overpayment, just so that's not left up to regulation.
That's not done in here?
I don't see it in there.
We could adopt that ourselves and send it on to judiciary.
Well, I mean, I have a problem with regressive taxes like this. I was just thinking about the cannery workers in my community that come in the summer and they barely survive. So I guess if the method of collection is similar to the old school tax, you take it out of their first check, which means that they really, really barely survive. And, you know, so it's one thing for those of us who earn at least a living wage to pay that $100. It's another for underemployed people, teenagers, and others who are getting very small checks to make that kind of a payment. So I have a problem with the regressive nature of the tax. And I also have a problem with trying to change it to call it a school tax. I mean, people in this state clearly hate taxes. $31 million is such a minor amount in regard to what education costs us that I just don't want them to transfer their hatred for this tax to schools as it's initiated. There's enough problems there.
Senator Breger.
Well, I think I probably disagree with just about everything I just said. I think that if the bill would have any chance of having a justification, it would be because there is a proposal on the table to reduce the instructional level for the K-12 foundation formula. And I think that certainly the precedent was the school tax, which existed in the state years ago. As far as the concern about cannery workers, I'm not sure if there were such a tax, whether it should be 10% of the first 1,000 or 5% of the first 2,000 or what the right way to serve it up would be. But I think that, you know, part of what we hear again and again is, you know, what about these people who come up in the summer, earn and pay nothing and go back to wherever it is they live outside? And why not try to get some tax out of the itinerant workforce that comes up here and just work for a while?
Senator Sharp?
Thank you. That provision is on page 6, line 1 through 5 for refunds, so we don't have to concern ourselves with that.
Okay.
And that allows, it looks like to me that would allow us to set a proper regulation. It's in there. But I, too, feel, just to add, I think that, you know, we've been adding just the formula funding anywhere from $12 million to $18 million a year for additional students just for that one item of education budget. I think it's just obvious that we've got to create some more funds for education. And in the past, wherever bills have earmarked the money to go, the legislature is pretty well honor-bound. I don't know of any instance where they have not seen that that went in there. There is an end to how many times we can afford that much of an increase each year, time and time again.
Well, again, I'm not certain that I'm going to support this bill if it does get to the floor. But I do think that since it's the governor's bill and we met with him a few hours ago and he did ask us what was going on with his revenue enhancement measures, I think it behooves this committee, since this is the first committee report, to move the bill out. I would like to see an amendment reimposing the name school employment tax, and with that, I'd like to send it on judiciary and see if there's any support out there in the body for it.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make the motion for you. Do you want to say school employment tax or school tax?
Well, I think it's an employment tax, and I think school employment tax is a proper nomenclature.
Okay. Okay. I'd move that the title and the references in the bill that refer to employment tax be revised to read school employment tax.
Okay. Is there an objection?
Object.
There is an objection. Will all those in favor signify by raising the right hand? Those opposed? Would the record show that Senators Kelly, Rieger, and Sharp were in favor, and Senator Sala was opposed? And so we have adopted a committee CS. Is there a motion on the bill? Senator Rieger?
I move that we report out SB 344, Labor and Commerce, with individual recommendations.
Without objection, Committee Bill 344, Committee Subcommittee has passed out with individual recommendations. We're going to go on to 348, relating to partnerships and amending Court Rules 20. I have to tell you that you know, today is one of those days that anybody's been on the legislative process understands. We're having a caucus or two. We'll go a little later than that. And we would like to get testimony started on Senate Bill 348. Ron, do you want to lead us off? Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Rod Lind. I'm an Alaskan CPA, having lived and worked in Alaska for the last 19 years. I'm managing partner of the Alaska practice of Deloitte & Touche, and I'm here today as a member of and on behalf of the Alaska Society of CPAs. I am here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 348, the proposed Registered Limited Liability Partnership Law. Selecting the form in which to operate is one of the most significant decisions a client starting a business or continuing an existing one can make. The choice of entity will have broad implications. It will affect how the business is conducted, the personal affairs of its owners, and even the employees. Consequently, it is important that businesses have and Alaska provide a full choice of forms in which for businesses to operate. The Limited Liability Partnership proposed law is a new type of general partnership that is beginning to sweep the nation. 6 states have enacted it, 6 more states have it on the governor's desk, and 15 are considering it in the legislature. The LLP form, as the limited liability partnership law is called, is appealing to lots of partnerships because it is easy for small businesses to get into, it is flexible, and is low cost to start. Providing this form will help small businesses. The limited liability partnership law has many positive attributes. First, it is simple to form, as I previously mentioned. It is simple to operate. Unlike a general corporation, there are no required articles of incorporation, bylaws, board of director meetings, or similar items. Third, it is taxed like a general partnership, meaning that the tax liability flows directly through to the LLP partners. The limited liability partnership also has one of the positive attributes of more complicated business forms, partial limited liability. A partner in a limited liability partnership is not personally liable for the debts and obligations of the LLP arising solely out of the errors, omissions, negligence, incompetence, or malfeasance committed in the course of the partnership business by another partner or by an employee of the partnership not under his direction. Please note that all partners continue to be personally liable for their own acts and omissions and the acts and omissions of persons over whom they have control. All partners also continue to be liable for all other debts of the partnership. The partnership, the LLP itself, remains liable for all actions of the partners and its employees. Beyond any investments in the limited liability partnership itself, the personal assets of the owners and their families need not be sacrificed to pay judgments arising from events or actions over which they have no control. While the other forms of organizations, such as corporations, professional corporations, and limited partnerships, which Alaska does provide for better protection for the personal assets of a business owner, they also require substantially more time, cost, and effort to maintain. Consequently, the limited liability partnership should appeal to the types of businesses today that are operating as partnerships and that cannot afford or do not have the time to deal with statutory and regulatory requirements of qualifying and operating as these other business forms. From Alaska's perspective, it is a tremendous advantage to offer this type of business. First, the LLP is a business development-oriented form of business. States at the forefront of economic development are there because they offer an expansive menu of organizational alternatives for doing business, and this is one of them. Enactment of an LLP is consistent with public policy already adopted by the state. Like any business form, the partners in an LLP also remain liable for all of their own actions, and the partnership remains liable for the actions of all of its partners and its employees. Adoption of a limited liability law will provide a favorable business climate. LLP law in Alaska will enable Alaska to keep pace with the rest of the nation and allow businesses that are resident here to better compete with out-of-state firms. For these reasons, we urge you to adopt this legislation. Thank you for allowing me to talk. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Just reading through the bill, it basically, this is just like a limited partnership, except that the other partners are insulated from acts of negligence of one partner. I mean, and basically that traces all the way through. Is that oversimplifying it too much?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rieger, yes, it is a general partnership. And it only provides limited liability for the partners who did not commit the negligent act. In a limited partnership, the partners in a limit cannot participate in the business. They are limited with respect to their actions and what they can do. This is all the partners will be able to act fully as general partners, but they will and it's only their personal assets that will be protected. Their investment in the partnership. All of the partnership assets, all of the partnership insurance are available for all these judgments.
Thank you. Sharp.
Mr. Chairman, it sounds like to me by establishing that it's going to really cause some confusion out there, especially when you go to get financing. Who's going to be liable for the debts? So it isn't going to be one partner anymore, can't obligate the partnership. And most banks and financing institutions, I assume, figure if they got a partner, unless it's a Chapter S partnership, if they got a partner signing, all partners are liable. And maybe if one partner goes in and signs a bank note for the partnership business, the rest of them are liable. But that isn't the way I read it in here. And if that's not the case, I think we're creating the shield of a corporation for partners. And I'm not so sure that's a good idea.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharp, The limitation on liability only is with respect to the negligence of a partner. All bank debt, leases, wages, everything are the responsibility of all partners and continue to be the responsibility of all partners. This limited partnership is only with respect to the negligent or the wrongful acts of an individual. Signing a if a partner goes in and signs a bank debt, all partners are liable on that debt, and nothing in this bill undoes that.
Through the chair, they're liable for personally and the assets of the partnership, or just the assets of the partnership?
Personally.
Their share. Personally.
Personally, yes.
Well, but is that unlimited? I mean, it says shall contribute towards losses according to share. If you're a one-quarter general partner and the other three partners don't pay, are you liable for all of the loss, or are you liable for just the 25%?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rieger, with respect to commercial debt, you are joint and severally liable on everything, including the bank debt. So if you have some bank debt, for instance, or a lease payable, and one partner says, I'm not going to pay, the other three are totally responsible for that. This provision only applies with...
That's existing law, too, right?
And that is existing law. Yeah. Nothing is being changed on that. This is only changing the liability of personal assets with respect to negligence on the part of a partner or an employee of the firm that a partner is directing. And it under the theory that you should not be responsible for the negligent acts of others. But a partner, a limited liability partner, is liable for everything, including their capital account, their insurance. All the partnership assets go first before they get to them.
Further questions? Do we still have Greg Ingram online in Fairbanks?
Present.
Did you want to testify on this bill, Mr. Ingram?
Yes. Testifying on behalf of the Alaska Bankers Association. And we oppose it because we feel it does open the door for any and all partnerships to limit their liability for their acts. Clearly, state legislation and state law has always held that one partner's act creates the liability for all the partners in the partnership. And that's a very fundamental point that's there because partners and owners are direct managers of the business organization. And third-party interests doing business with partnerships should feel comfortable in their transactions with any one of the partners. And if a partner, through his gross negligence, harms another third party, all those partners should be liable for that action. I sympathize with many of the accounting firms out there that have 1,500 partners, but they elected to have that form of business organization rather than incorporate. They could have simply incorporated or gone a different route to limit their liability. But they want the tax advantages, they want the management advantages of a partnership. So they got to take the good with the bad. That's basically all I have to say concerning this issue.
Okay, Mr. Ingram, you also signed up to testify on 347. Did you want to do that at this time also?
I would prefer, Mr. Chairman, to wait until other testimony is given on that issue as
okay.
Well.
Okay. Well, we're not going to be able to get to it today, so we'll make sure that staff gets a hold of you when we are able to get to that bill.
Okay. Would it be easier for me to testify on that issue now to the committee?
It really would be if you, yes.
I will do that.
Okay. 347 is Limited Liability Companies and Amending Court Rules. Number 24. Go ahead, Mr. Ingram.
In many respects, we're talking about the same fundamental issue here. You have a bill before you that has the potential to profoundly change the way business is done in the state of Alaska. You have three basic structures as far as business is concerned, actually four, but you have your sole proprietorship, as your partnership, and you have your corporation. Limited liability is only want the members or owners to be able, at this company, to manage the affairs of a limited liability company. So what I'd like to do is point out to you, if you have the bill in front of you.
Yes, we do.
Okay, under Article 3, Organization, it basically says one or more persons may organize a limited liability company.
Mr. Ingram, where are you at in the bill? Which page?
Page 5, Article 3, at the top of the page, line 6.
Okay.
It says one or more persons may organize a limited liability company. So what we're really saying here is sole proprietorship, partnerships, such as the gentleman you heard from before, and for that matter, a 2,000-member business could form this kind of an entity. Now, more than half the small businesses that start up each year fail, and the lion's majority of those are sole proprietorships, doing business as type companies. Now, the banks are not concerned with liability from the standpoint of making loans to these new businesses because most banks are sophisticated enough to tie down the customer's personal assets. However, through having, you know, personal guarantees. However, a lot of money can be lost in the business of trade and commerce because this small business does business with other small businesses. And if it has limited liability and it fails, those creditors out there that have done business with this company, or for that matter, the general public, will have no access whatsoever to go after that personal, that business's assets, or I should say that business owner's personal assets. That's been resolved in a lot of small businesses suffering bad debt losses because they can't collect from half these businesses that fail each year that are mom and pop solvable proprietorships. That's a very important fundamental point here with this particular legislation. There's also many, many areas of this bill that are highly technical in nature and are extremely confusing to the reader. You sit down and read through this bill, I think you'll agree with me. There's a real problem in Article 5, which is on page 6, that deals with management. A corporation, as I said earlier, has to elect directors as their managers. In the case of a partnership or sole proprietorship, the owners are managers. With this entity, you can either have the members as individual managers, or you can elect your own managers. And you can have more than one manager. There has to be majority rule. It's very, very confusing. The language needs to be cleaned up if you were ever going to pass this kind of legislation to create the league. But the real fundamental question is whether you want it at all. If you move on to the area that deals with assets of this company, it really gets scary, which is Article 10 on page 17. What it really is saying there is, through this whole article, basically it says that property of the company can be held in either the company name or in the individual member's owner's name or manager's name. Boy, that opens itself up for some real abuses as far as shuffling assets around. What assets does this company really have? You have to ask yourself those questions when they have that ability. A corporation cannot allow its officers or directors to hold assets in their name. Fundamental difference. Partnerships can, but partnerships are liable for their debts, personally liable. There's another difference. I don't need to be skipping around, but I don't want to take up a lot of your time. I want to mention another area of very large concern to the Alaska Bankers Association. And this is the main issue we really have. It's relationships to third parties, Article 7. If you go down to line 6, it's on page 13. You go down to line 6, it says, that appears to be performed in the usual way of conducting the affairs of the heirs of that company? I don't think so. This bill, in its present form, is a dangerous piece of legislation, and the banking community feels very strongly that we need to sit back and examine this very, very closely. Now, you'll hear a lot of arguments that 35 states that have passed this legislation is the best thing since sliced bread. We have not seen the prototype of this bill. It's not a uniform bill, such as the Uniform Commercial Code or Uniform Probate Codes or anything like that. This is a new entity. And the real ironic thing is they're presenting it as a wonderful thing, but if you look back in history, and I'll close on this note because I know I'm going way over, but if you look back in history, this is nothing really new. In a business law text that I took when I was in college, the issues of business organizations came up. And in the early 1900s, an organization called the Business Trust, or the Massachusetts Trust, was formed by certain states. It originally was formed in Massachusetts. Legal ownership and management of business property rested with one or more trustees, and profits were distributed to beneficiaries. Well, members and beneficiaries could easily be the same thing. The business trust originated as an attempt to obtain certain advantages of corporate status, such as limited liability, without incorporation. It was a fairly popular arrangement for a few years during the early 1900s, but it's seldom used today for two primary reasons. A number of states enacted statutes subjecting the business trust to many of the same burdens placed on corporations, such as payment of certain corporate taxes. Two, in many states, the beneficiaries were treated as partners, being held personally liable to business creditors. Now, why would they do that 100 years ago? Are we going back to redoing what has already been tried? I wonder sometimes here. But if we're going to try to reinvent the wheel, let's do it right. And this bill certainly does not do it right. I'll end on that note.
Thank you, Mr. Ingram. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Let's go back to 348. Did anybody else want to testify on 348 today? Okay, we're going to have to get to a majority caucus, so we'll stop the testimony here and bring the rest of these bills up at a following meeting. So anybody else wanted to address the committee without, the meeting is adjourned.